The following is a talk that I'm about to give here in Kayamisha Lake. The topic is Making Marriage Special. Shalom Bayis.
I'm deeply grateful to Rav Leibowitz Becker and to Mrs. Chana Bresser for having invited me once again to come to speak to all of you. When the Torah describes for us how Chava was created, it's written in Bereshit Beis, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayikach Achat Mishaloisa. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam took one of the sides of Adam, Vayisgar Basar Tachtena, and he filled in flesh in its place. The word Vayisgar is spelled Vav Yud Samach Gimel Reish. And the Medrash tells us something very interesting. The Medrash, Bereshit Rabba Yud Zayin Vav, tells us, Mitchilat HaSefer, from the beginning of the first word in the Sefer Torah, from the first word of Bereshit, until this word, Vayisgar, the letter Samach does not appear by any living creature. Not by the fish, not by the birds, not by the animals. The first time that the letter Samach appears is only by man and woman. And Rabbi Yechiel Aryeh Monk has a wonderful sefer called The Wisdom of the Hebrew Alphabet. And in there he explains why the letter Samach represents the idea of marriage, and that is why it is first mentioned by Adam and Chava. If we can picture a Samach in our mind, a samach is the only letter that is completely enclosed. It's a complete perfect circle. And that wall, which represents the outside of the samach, that represents the inner aspects of marriage. All of us within that samach, marriage was supposed to be a protective wall for every one of us, so that we were able to reach what we can actually call the ABCs of life. Within marriage, a person should have been able to feel accomplishment, that's A. He should have been able, a man and a woman would be able to B, build a family, and C, feel contentment. As a matter of fact, it's interesting to note that if you look in Bereshit Beis, Pasuk Yudches, the very famous Pasuk, Eseloi Ezer Kenegdoi, the Eibishter says that he's going to make an Ezer, a helpmate, to Adam HaRishon. If you look in Targum, the Targum says, Aved le-Semach. The word Ezer, the Targum for Ezer, is Semach, which again symbolizes that Samach. We all know the minig in Klal Yisrael, that when the Kala comes up to the Chuppah, she walks around the Chasen, she walks around numerous times, and that's based on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph Chaf Aleph, Nekeva Tesoivev Gever. The woman surrounds the man, and the dominating letter in that word Tesoivev once again is a samach, because the samach is a protective wall, and within the confines of that wall, a couple was supposed to be able to reach accomplishment, building a family, and feeling content. And it occurred to me, that's why the minute after she finishes surrounding him, Nekeva Tesoivev Gever, the man gives a perfectly round ring to the Kala. Because just like she is a protective wall to him, he too is supposed to be a protective wall for her, in which she can reach accomplishment, building a family, and contentment. I have a mechutin in Montreal. So his father, the Rechonu Livracha, Dr. Julius Pfeiffer, once said something very interesting. I don't even know if you could say it's a Yiddish mocker, but it's just fascinating anyway. And he said that the words Ezer Kenegdot, which obviously define marriage, they are the gematria 360. And there are 360 degrees in a perfect circle. So again, that's another symbolic act of the idea of the perfect circle, the Samach. However, tragically, all of us know situations where those walls have been broken. where those walls have crumbled, and all because the cracks of rifts, conflict, and dissension have crept into marriage. And so although the ideal was the perfect samach, the keva to save together, the round ring, the eza kenegdus, but never, all of us know of cases where this protective wall has never shattered and fallen. And so tonight, before we examine our own marriages, what we are going to do first is examine marriages in the Torah. And we are going to take three examples. But before we take these three examples, we must know that we will take these examples with the grace of their occurrence. And even though in these three examples we will see levels of conflict, levels of rift, and levels of dissension, we must know that we are talking about tzaddikim elyonim, the paragons, and those that we try to emulate in Torah. And so therefore, our petty arguments cannot, chas v'shalom, be compared in any way to their profound ideals. But still, we cannot deny the fact that the Torah is revealing to us certain things about the marriage of Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov and Rachel. Let's watch first by Avram and Sarah. We can all imagine that if, chas v'shalom, there is a child in a home that the father wants to keep in the home, even though he's going off the derech, and the mother wants to send that child away, we can understand that there would be a level of conflict, rift, and dissension. In Bereshis Chof Aleph Yud Beis Vayomer Elohim El Avram, the Eibishter says to Avram, Al Yeira Beinecha Al Anar V'Al Amasecha. Don't be distressed about this child. Kol Asher Tomer Elecha Sarah. You think one way, Sarah thinks another way. Sarah wants to get rid of you, Shmuel. She's right. You have to listen to her. And Rashi says, why did Avram have to listen to Sarah? Because she had Ruach HaKodesh, Lav Madnu Shehaya Avram Tofel L'Sarah Benaviyah. Sarah was a dresser and a via than Avram. But we can understand that Torah is telling us there was a level of difference here between Avram and Sarah. All of us know that when Sarah was told, she heard that she was going to have a child, but Yitzchak Sarah, she laughed. At her age, she's going to have a child. She said, it's impossible. But Dani Zokain, my husband is old. It's impossible. There's no way we're going to have a child now. What happens when Hashem is repeating this story to Avram? What does he say? He says, "Vayomer Hashem el Avram." The Eibishter said to Avram, "Bereishis Yudches Pasuk Gimel, Lama Zet Tochakos Sarah? Why did Sarah laugh?" She said, "V'ani Zakanti, I'm old." She didn't say, "I'm old." She said, "He's old." Why did Hashem switch it? Sarah said, "My husband is old. It's just not going to happen." And Hashem said, "You know what Sarah said? Sarah said she's old." Listen to this. Rashi says, "Shana Hakosel." The Avis that changed, the Pasuk changed with Neha Shalom. Could you imagine? Hashem is concerned that there should be Shalom bias between Avram and Sarah, so he switched around the wording. Sharehi Omra Vadani Zokin, she really said that he's old. So of course it's not us, obviously. But it's Avram and Sarah, but we can't deny the fact that the Torah is revealing to us here. There was a level of a question of Shalom bias, and the Eidister wanted to be that there would be Shalom bias. Listen to now Yitzchak and Rivka. You will absolutely be astounded at what the Netziv has to say. Again, we can understand tremendous conflict. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Yitzchak loves Esav. The Rivka, I have it, says Yankov. Rivka knows the truth. Yankov is a tzaddik. Esav is a rasha. And Yitzchak loves him. Why didn't she say anything to him? Couldn't she tell her, look, unfortunately you're blind and you don't see what this real story is. Yankov is the tzaddik. You know what the Netziv writes? An amazing thing. He writes, Rivka was in awe of Yitzchak. She was in such awe of him that she simply could not tell him anything that would be different than his opinion. And he shows it to us. The first time Vatisa Rivka Eseinela, she lifts up her eyes and she sees Yitzchak, Vatipo Miala Gomo. She just fell off the camel. She couldn't believe, this is the tzaddik I'm going to marry? She was so awed. The prophet tells us weiter, Bereshis Chavdalet Tamachei, Vatoymer Ela Evet, she says to Eliezer, Miyorish Alazer, who is this person? Haholech Vasod Elikoseinu, that's coming towards us. So the Evet tells her, that's your husband. Oh, say, that's her husband, Vatika Chatzoyf Vatiskos. She took her veil and she covered it. She couldn't even look at him. She was so awed. Now listen what the Netziv writes in the Hamikdava Bereshis Chavdalet Tamachei. V'loi hoysa im Yitzchak k'moy sara im Avram v'rachel im Yankai. Rivka didn't have the relationship that Sarah had with Avram or Rachel had with Yankai. Asher behayos lahem eitak peda. If let's say Rachel would have an objection or Sarah would have an objection, she could voice it to her husband. They wouldn't be embarrassed. But Rivka was in awe. It would almost seem to imply from the Hamikdava, from the Netziv, that's not the relationship. That's not the ideal relationship. And that's why perhaps she was afraid to say to Yitzchak what the truth was. So obviously there was a level of rift. There was a level of dissension. Yitzchak holds one thing, Rivka holds another thing, and she can't even tell him what she feels. Now let's watch one more thing. An amazing thing by Yankov and Rachel. Nebuch, Rachel didn't have any children. And she says to Yankov, please, give me children. Vayomer, Vayichar af Yankov v'Rachel in Bereish Islamet Bey. Yankov gets angry, Vayomer, and he says, Hatachas olikim anoichi, what am I instead of Hashem? Yes, the Davin, what do you want from me? I'm the one who's holding back children from you. Oy vey, what kind of talk is that? The Eidisha got very angry at Yankov. And it says, the Ramban brings in Bereshis Lamed, Pasuk Aleph, and the Medrash Rabbah, Bereshis Ayin Aleph Zion. Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Eidisha says, Kach oinim etam ukoi? That's how you talk to people who are unfortunate? Of course Rachel has to daven to me. But where's your gefil? Where's your sensitivity? There's a woman that's crying out. She wants to have children. And so the Torah is telling us, again, we must stress with the gresh to derech eretz. The Torah is telling us that by Avram and Sarah, there was some conflict, rift, and dissension on a higher level than us. By Yitzchak and Rivka, obviously, the communication wasn't there. And also by Yankov and Rachel. Why is the Torah telling it to us? What is the Torah trying to teach us? And I believe that what the Torah is trying to tell us is that rift, conflict, and dissension are all part of marriage. It's impossible to have a marriage without it. And the Torah tells it to us, Vayomer Hashem Elokim lo tov yaseh adam levado. It's no good a person should be alone. Eseh lo ezer kenegdoi. Ezer means a helpmate. Connect, I mean to counter for. No two people are alike. And man and woman were not meant to be alike. They're both going to have different ideals. The total picture should be that there's an Ezer connect us. But definitely there's going to be an Ezer to help long, and there's going to be a connect us. They're going to have opposing views. That's built into marriage. It can't be any other way. That's why I believe that no brothers and sisters can marry. Hashem doesn't want two people that are exactly the same. Hashem doesn't want a clone of just what came from the previous generation. Eibishter wants new children, new ideas, new home. As a matter of fact, you'll see an amazing shot in Rashi. For a moment, if you had to write a commentary on this pasuk in Chumash, how you would type it, and then let's watch and we'll see how Rashi types it. Alkein Yazav Yisrov Ve'Emay. This is the reason why a man leaves his parents, the Dovak Ve'Ishtoi, and he attaches himself to his wife, V'Hoyu Lebosar Echad. And they are as one. How would we type that? We know a husband and a wife come together as one. That's not what Rashi says. That's not the Lebosar Echad. Listen what Rashi says. V'Hoyu Lebosar Echad Havlad Noitzar Al Yedei Shneihem. The child is created through both of them. Visham in that child, Naseh Basaram Echad. The oneness comes in the new creation, not between the husband and wife. It's the new home. It's the new child. It's a new idea. It's a new potential that's fulfilled. That's the Basar Echad. When a husband and a wife work as a team and they create something new, that newness, that's what it's all about. That's why brothers and sisters don't get married, because it's just going to be the same as the previous generation. They're too much alike. And if that's the case, then we can understand perhaps the shot in a bracha at the Sheva Bracha. Baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Yoyser HaAdam. What does Yoyser mean? The Eivisha is creating. Yoyser is a Lashon Hoiva. If we're talking about Adam Arishan, it should have said Yoyser HaAdam. The Eivisha created man a long time ago. No. Right now. You know why? Because the Gemara says, Kol Adam She'ein Lo Yisha Ein Lo Adam. If a man is living without a wife, he's not a man. He's not complete. So when we come to a chasana, we are witnessing the creation of that man right now. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Yoyser HaAdam. Because a man without a wife is incomplete. So under the chuppah, we watch as this ideal of man is being created. Marriage is a challenge. There's no question that marriage is a challenge. But there's also no question that the reward for living up to this challenge can be glorious. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam gives every person an opportunity to find a potential best friend, a wonderful companion, a special mate, and hopefully a delightful partner in life. Why? Just so that we should all be able to fulfill our potential. It's impossible for a man to fulfill his potential without a good wife. And it's impossible for a woman to fulfill her potential without a good husband. And so now the question is, how are we going to meet this challenge? So there's a wonderful book. It's called Table for Two. It was written by a young man, Avram Peretz Friedman. He learned in Eretz Yisrael for many years. Today he's doing Kirov in Durham, North Carolina. And in there he has a wonderful statement that really defines for us what marriage is all about. He writes, marriage is all about not a question of finding the right partner, but being the right partner. If you are the right partner, then your marriage will be successful. So what's the first step? How can we learn tonight how to make your marriage successful? And the answer is, be happy. You've got to learn how to be a happy person. As a matter of fact, it's a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara is in Chinese, Chav Beis Amid Aleph. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliyahu HaNavi was once walking with Rav Broika. And he says, you know, these two people that are walking here, they have a straight ticket to Olam Haba. So Rav Broika was amazed. What do these two people do that they have a straight ticket to Olam Haba? Listen to this. So he asked them. So they said, you know what? We do special. Omrele, they said, Inchi Bedichi Anan. We are happy people. Mibatchinon Atzivi. We make sad people happy. That's why they're going to go straight to Olam Haba. So the Me'am Loyes has a terrific deal. And he writes like this. He says, She'im Adam Roitze L'smoyach Acherim. Sorich Hu Atzmoy Liyah Semeach. He writes this in Dvorim Kofches Pasik Mem Zayin. If you want to be able to make somebody else happy, you have to be happy. If you're a grouch, if you're depressed, if you're sad, you're going to make your kid sad, you're going to make your husband sad, and if a husband is depressed, he's going to make his wife sad. The first way to have a happy marriage is to learn how to be a happy person. Then, after you have happiness and you feel good about yourself, then you can first hope to make other people happy about them, about themselves. And one of the ways is to smile. You know, I once heard a great expression. A smile is a little curve that sets a lot of things straight. A smile is a little curve that sets a lot of things straight. And you know, we have to know something. Rabbi Shlomo Salanter once said, your face is a reshus harabim. You know what that means? How many times do you see your own face today? Fine, every time you look through in the mirror. Fine, how many times is that? Five times, six times. But the world sees your face. And when you're walking in the street, If you look like a grouch and you look depressed, it affects other people around you. But if you have a happy demeanor, then people feel pleasant around you. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Shaul Salanter was once walking in the street in Chodesh Elul, and he sees that this person is walking with a very umidika face, and it's looking down. We've seen all these kind of people. So Rabbi Shaul Salanter says, he goes over to him, he says, what's the matter? He says, it's Elul, I'm doing tshuva. He says, because you're doing tshuva, I have to suffer. If a person looks down, it reflects badly on other people. It makes other people feel bad. I have I'm very, very close to a certain Rav in Brooklyn. You all know who he is. So a couple once went to him for marriage counseling. So he poskened. He poskened for the husband that the husband has to come home at night from work and tell his wife a joke at the table. And then afterwards, he happened to speak to me the next day. He said, you know, I think he made a mistake. Because with that guy sent to you, I should have told him to make 3 jokes because the first 2 probably won't even be funny. Nothing wrong with laughing. A husband and a wife together. A person has to be happy. And if you're happy, you'll be able to make other people happy as well. I want to give you one of the greatest bits of advice I ever heard in my life. When I was preparing for this talk, I spoke with many marriage counselors. I spoke with many rabbonim. I spoke with many people who had happy marriages, who have, and many people who have lousy marriages. I wanted to get all angles. And I spoke to a wonderful marriage counselor, a friend of mine. That's not the reason he's my friend. We happen to daven in the same shul. But Dr. Abba Goldman, listen to what he said. And some of you may remember this. I said this on the video on Tisha B'Av. I think it is one of the greatest bits of advice I've ever heard. He said he says this to many, many couples. And he tells them that when they walk into the house, they should do exactly what he does. At night, when he comes home, he puts his hand on the mezuzah and he waits a moment outside the door and he thinks to himself, what's my wife going to look like tonight? Is she going to wear makeup the way I would like her to? Are the kids going to be relaxed? Is the house going to look like it's yontif? Of course not. Oh, there'll be times when she wears makeup. It's not going to happen every night. She's not going to look like she's going out on a date. It's just not going to happen. Not every night. And he said, the worst thing in marriage is certain anticipations that can never be fulfilled. So the first thing is you have to think of the reality. What is the reality? What is the house going to look like? And then he says, remember the pasuk that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam said to Kayin. In Bereishis Dalet Zayin, La Pesach Chatos Roiveh. At the door, sin rests. That means that when somebody is about to walk into a home, or walk into a business, or walk into a school, or walk into any venture, the Yetzer Hara is there. The Yetzer Hara is ready to stick in his daggers and make trouble. So how are you going to get out of that chata? At the end of the pasuk, it says, Va'ata Tim Shalvon. You can rule over it. So what we are going to learn to do from tonight on, every husband, when they walk into the house, the first thing should be something positive. La Pesach Chatos Roiveh. The way you walk into the house, if you say something positive, something cheerful, that sets the tone of good cheer. But if you say something negative, that will set a bad tone. So when a husband walks into the house, the first thing he should say, the kitchen smells great. Or else he could say, the shiur was great today. Or I made a great deal. I heard somebody got engaged. And the same thing is for the woman as well. When she greets her husband the first time after they've been separated the whole day, the first thing she should say is something positive. I heard one of the kids did something special in school today. I baked a special cake. I heard something good in Eretz Yisrael. My mother decided not to come. Something positive. Something positive. And then the rest will take care of itself. Of course, a wife has the right and should tell how crazy the kids were and how difficult the day was, but don't start out that way. La Pesach Chatos Roiveh. When you walk into the house, know that you can set the tone. And it's the same thing for children when they walk into the home and parents when they greet the children. always the first comment should be something positive. You know, when a chassan and kala are going out and they're already engaged, they are so convinced that they are so alike that there was never created a chassan and kala like them. Could you imagine? Chassan and kala, you know what they once told me? I had a different chassan and kala, you know, you hear all these kind of, we both want to live in Eretz Yisrael. Could you imagine? Unbelievable. Another chassan once said, you know, when I came back from Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, I didn't know my kala, nothing. I went to Switzerland because I love the mountains. Then when I got engaged, I found out she also went to Switzerland. Could you imagine? We both love the mountains. Or another chassan kala once said, we're both so musical. I was a choir leader in camp. He leads this music in the yeshiva. Could you imagine? Do you know a chassan and kala actually told me that they both used crest with powder protection? And another one told me that they both used sloth, vintage sloth. Could you imagine? When I was going out, believe me, I had no idea if my wife lost, she knew if I not. I had no idea if I lost. We don't talk about these things usually. But here's the best. Here's the best. The best ever that I ever heard of Chosin and Kala. I happened to be close to this Chosin before he met this girl. And he said to me, I knew she was the one when she told me she loved Rabbi Krohn's face. Listen to what this guy did. Listen to what this guy did. You will never believe this. I couldn't make it up if I tried. This guy took one of my tapes, and he's on a tape, and he erased part of a story that I was telling. And he dubbed his voice into that tape. So the girl, they're not engaged, their girl is sitting in the car, and they're listening to my tape, and I'm excited. And you know, I'm telling a story, and all of a sudden, the voice comes in. Devorah, you who are sitting in the car, are you going to marry Yeshua, who is the most special boy, and just say just for you? Could you believe? And you know, they got engaged. And the girl is sitting right there. Devorah, you'll tell everybody who you are later. Could you believe that? She really is. I didn't know she's coming tonight. But you know what happens a few weeks after marriage? They find out that Rabbi Friend also has tapes. But they're not so similar. And then all of a sudden, when there's some rift and there's some conflict and some dissension, they both realize, wait a second, he's a nice person. When he was learning in the Beis Medrash, he used to go to sleep in the afternoon so he could be able to learn late at night. Now the guy wants to be up till 12 o'clock. I'm working tomorrow morning. I got to be asleep at 10:30. So now he wants to talk. She wants to retire for the night. So there's a level of rift. There's a conflict. There's dissension. Or his father's in Los Angeles, and he makes a call 10 to 11, 10 minutes before the rates are cheaper, and she's going crazy. Oh, I'm working for you. I'm not buying Cocoa Pebbles. I'm not speaking about my genetics. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, in America, they'll buy, but in America, in Eretz Yisrael, no Cocoa Pebbles. When I go to Eretz Yisrael, I have to bring Cocoa Pebbles. So, she's so meticulous. And what happens? Sometimes you have a guy, the guy's so neat. His mom is cleaning every day the poster with a toothpick. You know, and she was raised in a home where the mother said to her, all you got to do is close your room. I don't care. So what happens? The mother, what a chachoma she is. She doesn't realize that if you don't train this kid, so by the time she gets married, the whole house is going to look like that. And of course it does. And this husband is immaculate and neat. So now all of a sudden there's rift and there's conflict and there's dissension. And soon they're beginning to panic. All of a sudden they thought they were so similar, but they're not that similar after all. So I'll tell you something very interesting. Rav Mordechai Chandler told me that any time there was a chosen in First Yerushalayim and the chosen had to get some advice from Rav Moshe Feinstein, so Rav Moshe Zechatar of Kodesh of Bracha told every single chosen the same medrash. Listen to this medrash. Bamidbar Rabba Chof Aleph Beis Kishem She'ein Partufei En Zayin Zelazer. Just like no two faces are alike, Kach Ein Daton Shavin Zelazer. No two mindsets are alike. What Rav Moshe was trying to tell the chassan is no two men think alike. No two women think alike. Kal v'chomer of ben benoit, so kal v'chomer that men and women don't think alike. So we don't need that book, men are from Yerushalayim and women are from Bnei Brak. We know right over here, Chazal tell us alone that men are different from women. No two people think alike, kol shekein, men and women don't think alike. So what happens when there's conflict? What happens when there's some rift or dissension? So I'll show you something also, an amazing thing that Dr. Albert Goldman showed me. A remarkable thing. You know, he told me that he used to get many calls for speaking engagements. And he stopped going. And he said, you know why he stopped going? Because many times, most of the questions that women asked him were about chinuch. And he said, that's not what life is all about. Chinuch is important, but marriage is what life is all about. And he showed me a fascinating Rashi. Look it up in Mishle, Yudalit, Pasik, Aleph. All of us know this Pasik. Chachmois, Noshim, Bonta, Beta. The wisdom of women, that's what builds a home. The Ivelet, and that terrible woman, Biodeha, she can, to Hashanah, with her hands, she can destroy it. What is it referring to? What does it mean, a woman building a home, or Chas v'Shalom destroying a home? Hachochmoy Sheben Noshim, Rashi writes. The wise women, Boinais es Bateihem, they can build their homes, Kamoy Ishtoi Shel Oin Ben Peles. Oin Ben Peles, he was going to go with the Korach people, and his wife didn't let him. That's called building a home. That's what marriage is all about. That's what wisdom is all about. But to Hashenu, that was the wife of Korach, who said, you're as good as anybody else. You should fight Moshe, you should fight Aaron. Who are they? And she built them up in such a way that he felt that he was such a big Balgaiva that he could accomplish, and he was angry at the leaders of Klal Yisrael. Marriage is what's all about, building a home. And just like we read books and go to shiurim and listen to tapes on chinuch, we have the obligation to read kosher books and listen to kosher tapes and listen to drushes about shalom bayis and make that a priority. And make it a priority for children before they get married. Those of you who know me personally know that one of my closest friends is Yaakov Salomon. Yaakov Salomon is a marvelous psychologist, or social worker, whatever you call it. And he told me something, I could not figure this out. It bothered me for so many years. When you hear, never, a young couple after 3 or 4 months and the marriage is over. And to me, it's just, you know, what in the world could have happened? Okay, now, Chas v'Shalom, it should never happen. Sometimes one of the couple has a tremendous, terrible illness that the other person didn't know about and they feel that they were fooled. So that's a separate issue. And then we can understand Chas v'Shalom, it should never happen, but something like that would break up. But otherwise, what in the world went on over here? And you know what he told me? An amazing thing. He says the best chinuch for marriage that we can give our children is to have a good marriage ourselves. Because what happens with these young kids when they get married, after 3 months or after 2 months, when they get into their first argument, and the husband thinks, uh-oh, my father went through Gehenna because of my mother. She was such a nag, she made his life miserable. I'm out of here. I'm getting out of here before it's too late. I'm not going to go through what he went through. Or sometimes the wife, the young wife, knows that her mother never went through verbal abuse. And a non-caring husband, a guy who didn't do anything, who was a bazillion to the family, to the inner family, to the outside, and the shul, he was terrific. But the kids knew how the mother suffered. And she gets the first argument, and she says, oh no, I'm getting out of here. I don't want to go through this, what my mother went through. And then they panic. And he's the last step before they go to the rock for a divorce. And many times he's able to stem it, but sometimes he even can't. And where does that happen? We have to be careful. We have to set the example. We have to set the example of what it means to have a good, loving, kind, considerate, caring marriage. If we don't have it, they won't have it. Most of the time, that's what's going to happen. Most of the time, if parents have been fighting and arguing, the kids will think that's the way it's supposed to be. We have the gresha achlayis to set an example for those kids. I'll tell you something that a young couple in Baltimore did I tell you I am so inspired from this? I was in Baltimore. I got to know this couple. They came to my home one day for Yontif. And I was telling them I'm going to speak on marriage. So they told me I could use their names. Obviously, I'm not going to. Let's call him Shimon. We'll call her Shana. They were married just a few months. And all of a sudden, they realized there was a certain level of conflict, rift, and dissension. And they were both a little frightened. So he came up with this genius idea. He said to his wife, look, I'm going to write down 20 things that are important to me. And I will rate them from 1 to 100. And then you rate them 1 to 100. And then you write down 20 things. And you rate them, and I'll rate them. And then perhaps we can see what we really consider is important. And they became so close because of this. Because now they had a level of communication that was remarkable. Let me show you what they did. They showed me the chart. So I'll give you an example. They live in an apartment house in Baltimore. And obviously they don't have a laundry machine in the house. They have it down in the basement. So she wrote down these things. Taking down the laundry fast when I ask you. She rated that 95. You know what he rated it? 10. So, of course, he didn't think it was so important. So I'll take it down in 20 minutes. But now that he sees that it's 95, so he didn't realize. Here's another thing. She wanted he should look neat. She doesn't like that his shirt is sticking out, that his hat is up, his tie is not uptight. She considered that 97. He considered that 30. So, of course, if he walks in and he looks like he just went through a windmill, so, of course, you know, he feels like I just had a hard day, but she's upset about that. Here's another thing. Coming home on time. Calling home if you're going to be late. Right? Oh, I see you already. So, of course, like most women, she rated it 100. He rated it 60. So, of course, what they did is they took this chart and they put it on their kitchen table. They have a see-through plastic tablecloth, and they keep it on the kitchen table, and every day they look at it. Now let me show you what he wrote. Friday night, the table should be set when I come home from shul. She figured, like, what's the big deal? Fine, so I'll put on the silverware later, the napkins. What's the big deal? The spoons, the silverware. He rated that 100. She rated that 65. Listening to my Vatera, right? He has a lot of guys from the cuddle that he invites, so they're all there. He doesn't care if they listen, he wants her to be proud. So to him, that was 100. To her, that was 70. Now here's one that he wrote. I mommies don't understand it. I didn't want to ask him because she was sitting there. He said to be logical. He wanted her to be logical. He rated that 99, she rated that 50. But I think they're working out okay. I'll tell you another young couple. It's amazing. I just could not get over this, that another young couple also did something to Ames there. I was talking to this couple, and I told them about the first couple, and they said, you know, we also do something like that. I couldn't believe it. You know, somebody who happened to hear me say this idea said, where were you 20 years ago? Listen to this. The young couple, he's a Rebbe, he teaches, he comes home Sunday afternoon. She's also a teacher. Sunday's a lot of work. Can I know how to have kids in the house? It's a bahala. He wanted the Sunday to be quiet and peaceful, the only day really that he has off. So he was very upset. And she can understand that he's upset, but you know, there's 100 different things to do. The laundry to do, the dishes, and the kids, and I don't have to tell you all the things that women have to do. There's no end. So you know what she did? Amazing thing. She figured out, she said, you know, there are 20 things that I have to do on Sunday. I am going to give you these 20 things, and you rate them in importance, and I'll do the first 7 or 10 without a problem. But I just can't do all 20. It's impossible. By the time you come home, 1, 2 o'clock, it's impossible, but I'll do the first 10. So she thought the first thing should be to have lunch ready. She put that as number 1. You know where he put it? 14. He said, I'll make my own sandwich. To me, it's more important that the house is not a bahala. You know what she put down as 2? You wouldn't believe. That she should be wearing a shako. That she should be looking nice when he comes in. He put that at 20th. What a great husband. He said, look, I love you the way you are. You can wear a snood. You don't have to wear your contacts. You can wear your glasses. That's okay with me.
Amazing, right?
And then kahena v'kahena, the thing that he wanted more than anything else, number one to him, was that the children should be happy. He said, if I come in and I see that you're playing with the kids and they're content and they're not killing each other and you're just sitting even on the floor with them, I don't care. You don't have to make me lunch. Now, to her, she didn't think that that's really what he wanted. But once they had this list, they were able to be able to communicate. They keep the channels open. Okay, the living room clean. Okay, he's above beneath us, fine. So she doesn't mind that. She's happy to do it. She just can't do everything. I remember a very close of a lady once told me she doesn't like to have a wife. Avram Peretz Friedman, the one who I told you wrote the book Table for Two, he once said something very interesting. He said in his experience of marriage counseling, the turning point always is when the spouse understands that maybe there's something that I'm doing to cause this problem. There are many, many people who feel that they are trapped in a marriage and that the other person is terrible, a Russia or a Mashad, and I'm the one that's a tzaddikus, so I'm the one that's the tzaddik, and I'm just suffering no end. But the turning point in his experience is when both parties can admit maybe there's something that I'm doing that's wrong. And that's something that we have to ask ourselves also. Another psychologist, another marriage counselor once mentioned to me the three most important words in marriage. You know what they are? Not what you think they are. The three most important words in marriage, Mayor Whitler once told me, are I was wrong. I was wrong. It's very important if a person can begin to admit to himself that perhaps he's at fault or she's at fault. And there's a very interesting story that I told over many, many times that I heard from Avshalom Shradron about this Hasidic fellow who was sitting once at a table, a Seder table. He was sitting at the Seder and he was eating the soup and he saw a wheat kernel in the soup and he was furious. He had just gotten married a week or two before and here his mother-in-law has wheat in the hot soup, mamish chometz. And the next morning he came to shul, he was very despondent. And Rav Shmuel Talanty from Yerushalayim saw this fellow. He sees he's so despondent, so he goes over to his father-in-law. He says, what's with the chosin? He says, I don't know. And he calls over the chosin of Shmuel Talanty and he says, what's wrong? So finally he told him. He said, quickly, come outside with me right away. He comes outside and he says to one of the gabbaim, quickly, bring me a shmata. And he takes off the shrimal from this guy's head, from the young chassid, and he wipes out the top of the shrimal, and 3 wheat kernels come flying out. And the chassid is stunned. You know how they got there? Because the week before by his Yisroel, in Eretz Yisroel, they don't throw candies like we do. They throw wheat kernels. So he had the wheat kernels in his shrimal. He was looking down on the soup, it fell from his shrimal. So Rav Shalom said, before you accuse somebody else, you better check your own shrimal. And that's a great lesson. That's a great lesson. That's what Avram Peretz Friedman is telling us. Many times the problem in marriage may be with yourself. And you have to be honest with yourself. And think, maybe, because it always takes two people to cause conflict, rift, and dissension. There's another wonderful answer that I heard from another marriage counselor in Brooklyn named Yoel Lipset. He told me many people, each one has to know that they have a tremendous power to enhance and influence the relationship for good. And you know how you can do it? By complimenting. Many of us make a terrible mistake. We think that everything has to be perfect in order to compliment. There are many husbands who feel that if the meat is good, that the potatoes are lousy, so the meal is not good. Compliment the meat. And there are many wives who feel that if a husband is wearing a tie that will blind someone, then all she's going to say is, you look awful. What about his suit? What about his shoes? What about his hat? Compliment that. A person has to look for the good to compliment. There's no one that a husband wants more to compliment him than his wife. And the same thing, a wife doesn't want anyone else more than anyone else in the whole world. She wants the husband to compliment. But we make this tremendous mistake. We think everything has to be perfect in order to give a compliment. That's wrong. Find the good and then be able to give a compliment. Rav Matis Roberts, who teaches Chassanim, in Shara Torah, always tells the Chassanim. And he would tell it to the Kalas, but he teaches Chassanim. There are four A's that should always be in marriage. Admiration, attention, appreciation, and affection. Here's another thing. We have to learn how to say thank you. Most of us have forgotten to say those two words. When was the last time a husband thanked a wife for the meals that she made? When was the last time a wife thanked a husband for the money that he brought home? Men work very hard. It's a tough world out there. And I always say that a woman who wants to be thanked for the challah that she made has to thank her husband for the dough that he brings home. I'll tell you something interesting. There's a wonderful tape. Rabbi Miller has a tape that's called The Ten Commandments of Marriage. It's a wonderful tape. And you know what he says? You know what should be the first Vatayra every Friday night? That the husband should thank the wife for the meal that she makes. That should be the first Vatayra. And I'll tell you something else that my Rebbe Rav David told me. And I didn't even know this. Most people don't even realize this. Because it's in the Havdama of the Magen Avram in Or HaChaim Siman Reish Ayin Dalet. It has about the halachas of making a moisi. It says it gives an order to children every Friday night. Toiv lenashek yedei imoy b'leil Shabbat. It's good and proper to kiss the mother's hand every Friday night. Devorah, remember, the baby's only 6 months. You got to teach him Friday night to kiss the mother's hand, and you teach them. You teach them from kindvice on. That's an appreciation. That's a thank you. And I want to tell you something. I know that men listen to the tape, and this is more for men than women. But what is wrong? Why should a husband not wait for the wife to come to the table until he begins eating? You can clap. Especially a family, 7, 8, 9 children. This one wants fish with the carrot, this one fish without the carrot, with the ketchup, with the mayonnaise, with the carrot and the ketchup, without the mayonnaise. But as soon as she brings it to the table, it's all gone. Except for the hot soup. Okay, I understand. But otherwise, she's not a servant. She's not your maid. Now, of course, the husband is the one who should eat first, and nobody starts till the husband starts once everybody's at the table. But there's no reason why a husband should start before the wife comes to the table. And I happened to mention this once in another city, I don't want to say where. So a lady comes over to me afterwards, she says, I must get your tape. So I say, why? Of the whole marriage, what point was strong to you? She says, this point about my husband waiting. So I said, so why don't you tell him after all? Listen to what she said. She's such an edler person. She said, you know, it's so many years already that this bothers me. And my husband is so sensitive. If I were to tell him this, it would hurt him so much that all these years he was giving me pain. So if he listens to the tape and he picks it up, fine. If not, I'll live with it. It's very edel. But I'll tell you another thing. Why should train their children as my wife trained our children? When she comes home shopping with the children, they always, even my married daughters today, still call and say thank you for the clothes you just bought me. A wife should train children to say thank you to a father, even though he's not there shopping with the dresses. Where did the money come from? I'll be right. And if the father is the one who brought it into the house, you teach your children to say thank you. And if husbands and wives don't take each other for granted, children, when they get married, will understand that you don't take spouses for granted. Never, ever degrade your spouse in public. How many times have all of us been at bar mitzvahs or chasanas or other parties or whatever, and a husband and a wife are arguing and you don't know where to bury yourself? It's so humiliating. They look like such fools, but it's so embarrassing for everyone else. Never, never degrade a husband or a wife in public. Never, ever degrade a spouse in front of the children. All you're doing is breaking their security and breaking their stability and breaking their sense of belonging. You have to think to yourself, what did you look like? What did you look your mother? How did you view your mother or your father? To you, they were pillars. Okay, so we, in a lot of humility, we figure out, who are we? Come on, I'm not a father like my father. Or somebody says, I'm not a mom. My mother was a mother. My father was a father. Who am I? But that's not how your kids look at you. Your kids look at you. Your children view you as pillars. And when you degrade, you break that pillar, it breaks the stability of that child, and they end up on 13th Avenue or on Coney Island Avenue in the pool shop. Why are they there? Because they have no stability at home. They don't feel confident because they feel that samach is crumbling, because that samach is breaking, because the husband and wife are killing each other. A husband and a wife should differ, and they should differ in front of the children. I think it's terrible if a husband and a wife have differences of opinion and they don't share it at a table where the children are. Of course, a child should know that parents have different ideas. One is more of a spender, one is less of a spender. One wants to go on a vacation, one doesn't want to go on a vacation. That's not the end of the world. But that's what our mind is telling us. We're different. What, are you going to give your kids a false sense of security and tell them Papi and Mommy never argue? It's ridiculous. You know it's not true. And then when they have the first argument, they're panicking. Terrace is, you can have differences, but not chas v'sholem demeaning. And never degrade yourself. There are some people that say, oh, I'm so stupid. How could I have done? I'm so dumb. You keep on saying you're dumb. After a while, your husband's going to believe you're dumb. Or some people say, I'm so fat, I'm so ugly. You keep on saying that, the spouse is going to believe it. If you're upset with those things, then make sure that those things don't exist. The beautiful pshat in a pasuk. Wait, we're coming to something else. Don't worry, I'm not finished with this. It says by the Meraglim, Bamidbar Yud Gimel Lamed Gimel, V'nehi be'einenu kechagovim. The Meraglim said, we were in our eyes compared to those giants. We were like grasshoppers. V'chein hayinu be'einei, and that's how they looked at us. Sirab, Yecheskel Avramsky. One said, you know why those giants looked at them like grasshoppers? Because what did they say in the beginning of the pasuk? We were in our eyes, we looked like grasshoppers compared to them. And that's why they looked at us like that. That's why they started to look at us. They looked at the Meraglim like grasshoppers because the Meraglim felt they were that way. Don't degrade yourself in front of your spouse. And here's something which is really embarrassing to talk about in public. But we have to talk about it anyway. Because it's an integral part of marriage. Men and women have to continue to be attractive to each other, both physically and mentally. There is no reason, unless of illness, to be grossly overweight. A husband and a wife did not marry each other in that condition. And therefore a person must, unless Chas v'Sholem there's an illness, must do something about it. And this is not pleasant to talk about. There's no reason for bad breath. And there's no reason for bad body odor. These are things that men, after a while, and certain women, just forget about. It's wrong. You would never in your right mind go out on a date like that. You would never go to a chasana like that. You wouldn't go in public like that. So why should a husband or a wife have to suffer with that? It's just absolutely wrong. And mentally you have to be attractive. When you are going out, you had a whole world to talk about. How many times do husbands and wives sit at a table? There's nothing to talk about. There's a whole world out there. There's a million things going on. You have what to talk about when you are going out. There's cultural material to read. There's divrei Torah to say over. There were things that you had mutual interest. If you want a marriage to grow, you have to be physically and mentally attractive. And always to be neat. There's no excuse unless you're washing a floor or a man is playing basketball in a gym. A person doesn't have to look like he's going to a chasana every night. But neatness is at least what every husband or every wife can expect from each other. And be a good listener. So many people complain. I remember, okay, listen, I know myself. I remember one time I was sitting at the table, sitting at the table, the kids were already off to school, and my wife was talking to me, and I'm reading something, and she said, "You're not listening to me." I said, "Yeah, I'm listening." And she said, "What did I just say?" You said, "You're not listening to me." But, that really happened. But the truth is, it's wrong. A person has to be a good listener. And one more thing. You have to learn to ask for advice. If you're a scientist, then your wife is not going to help you in that, obviously. And if a person is learning Erevin, he's learning the daf, obviously he's not going to ask his wife, shot in the faces. But it's a chiyuv, and it's an obligation for a husband to ask a wife for advice, and a wife to ask a husband for advice. That's the reason that you got married. You're in this thing together as an Ezer Kenegdai. Now we're going to come to a very difficult part of the talk. And this is where many marriages begin to unravel. No one is perfect. And everyone finds that there is a need to criticize. But there is a way to criticize. And I'll tell you something very interesting. I believe I mentioned this on that video as well, but it's important to mention it over again. Aaron and Miriam spoke lashon hara against Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Eidoshe was very angry. And it says in Pasuk Bamidbar Yud Beis Vav, "Vayomer Shimuna Devarai." Hashem said, "Please, Aaron and Miriam, listen to my words. Listen to my words. I want to give you Musar." And Rashi says, "Ain no ever lashon bakasha." Hashem is giving Musar, and he's pleading with them. Please listen. Listen to what the Sifrei Chacham says. Even though Hashem got angry at them, Mikol Mokim ain no ever lashon bakasha. He pleaded with them. The Dibur Amon the Nachas, and he gave them, and he spoke words pleasantly, kindly, softly. Sheilu Hayat Barav Bekas. If the Eibusha would have spoken words of anger to Aaron and Miriam, Lo Hayu Barav Nishmaim, the words would not have been listened to. Could you believe that? We're talking here about Aaron. We're talking about Miriam. But if the Eibusha would have yelled, he would have been angry, it wouldn't have been Menachas, the Sifrei Chachamim is telling us they wouldn't have listened. So many times we yell at kids, we yell at a husband and a wife, and we bully that person into doing what we want, but there's tremendous resentment there. So the Sifrei Chachamim says, "Kavachayim alavos avedom, sheyiyu tvorov Menachas." A person has to be able to learn to speak calmly, even if you're criticizing. So now let's learn how to criticize. There's a specific criticism, there's a global criticism, and there's the demeaning criticism. The specific criticism, you can still love a person. A global criticism, you can still live with a person. A demeaning criticism, you want to leave that person. Here's a specific complaint. "I'm upset you didn't put away the towel. I just cleaned the bathroom. I'm upset you didn't put away the towel. I'm upset you didn't put away the cup from the kitchen table. I just cleaned the kitchen. I asked you to put it in the kitchen sink." That's specific. Globalist, you always leave a mess wherever you go. Got nothing to do with this cup. You never clean up. Their meaning is you're a slob, just like you learned it in your mother's home. That's terrible. Don't think people don't talk like that. That's the beginning of the end. That's demeaning. Here's a specific criticism. "I feel bad you didn't pick up my suit from the cleaner." Or the wife says to the husband, "I feel bad you didn't pick up the milk from the store on the way home from the shore like I asked you." That's specific. Somebody can understand a criticism like that. Global. "You never do what I tell you. You're absent-minded. You never do. You always block me out. Always." That's global. And the meaning is, "You have no brains. That's why you're losing your job. That's why you're going to get fired. You don't listen to anyone." If, chas v'shalom, people are holding by demeaning criticisms, they need terrible help. They need help, and they need help fast. No one is perfect. We all have a right to criticize. But we have to criticize specifically. Try to avoid globally. But chas v'shalom, never, never demeaning. And now I'm going to tell you one of the saddest stories you'll ever hear in your life. And I know many of you heard it, but if there's two people in this room who didn't hear it today, we can all cry together. Listen to this story. I have gotten calls across the country because of this story. There was a couple here in the Catskills. They came up every summer. She had nine children. And every time when a husband and a wife, when they would get, they had a good marriage, but any time that they would get into a little argument, she would always say the same word. The lo chashuv, it's not so important. Don't make such a big deal about it. And he was neat, and she wasn't so neat, and she might leave the dishes around till Sunday morning. And he would come into the kitchen Sunday morning and said, why didn't you clean up the dishes? And she said, the lo chashuv, it's not so important. Or he was always on time. He would come 6 o'clock to a 6 o'clock drosha, and she would come 10 after 6 to make people wait. And he would say to her, why are you late? And she would say, Zelo Chashuv. And many times she took it diffused, the tense moment. So she was up here in the bungalow. And she called him one Thursday night in New York, and she said to him, please bring me the checkbook. I need the checkbook. We're running out of checks. Make sure you bring it tomorrow. And he comes, he puts it into his Glatmark shopping bag, and he brings it Friday morning, he's meticulous, he gives it to her right away. Shabbos morning, he wakes up, and when he wakes up in his room in the bungalow, there is a shopping bag hanging on the crib with the checks in it, and he's furious. She made a long distance call. She said she wanted the check, and it's still in the bag, and she didn't even take it out. But he figured, what's he going to do? He's going to make a big deal about it. He's going to start yelling at her. The kids are there. He only comes up once a week anyway. And besides, if he says anything to her, you know what she'll say. The lo chashuv, not so important. Fine, he goes back to the city Sunday. Next Friday, he comes back to the bungalow colony. And he walks into his room, and the bag is still there. On the crib, in the bedroom, with the checks in it. And he's livid. He's furious. You call me up, you make such a big deal about it, and a whole week you didn't take out the check. So what is he going to do, make a big deal about it? And ruin the Shabbos, the kids are there, he comes up only once a week. And besides, you know what she'll say? She'll say, it's a lo chashuv, it's not so important. So he doesn't say anything and he goes back Sunday. And he's back in the city on Sunday, on Tuesday morning he gets a frantic call. His wife was expecting a baby, and they rushed her to the hospital. And it took him 2.5 hours to get up, and by the time he came to the hospital, she had already passed away, never. She had died from a terrible complication in childbirth. And when he saw all the relatives, and he saw all the friends, he knew something was terrible. And he went back to the bungalow colony with his friends and the relatives. And when he came into the room, the first thing that he saw was that bag with the checks in it. Still there. And he took out the checkbook. And the first check he wrote to the Chevra Kadisha. And the second check he paid for the Levaya. And then when he went back to New York, he took the bag and he hung it up in his closet. And on the outside of the bag, he wrote 3 words, Zelo Chashuv. And he kept it there for 6 months. And that lesson that he learned in death, we have to learn in life before it's too late. Most of the arguments that we get into are really Zelo Chashuv. One thing builds on the other, and it builds higher and higher and higher until there's a tremendous volcano never. And relationships are breaking up, and children are destroyed. But if a person would only realize Zelo Chashuv, that rift and that conflict and that dissension that emanated from that little petty argument. You don't have to answer every time a husband says something or every time a wife says something. If you leave it alone and you don't answer, it can't build. One person can't argue with himself. But we want to answer because we feel to get in our cupboard. And so therefore one says this and the other says this and you bring up other things and it becomes global. And from global it's demeaning and then it's a hobahola. So if you do have to criticize, try to consider it. Try to criticize in such a way that you bring out something positive. You're always so considerate. How could you have said that to my mother? You're so intelligent. How could you have left the keys in the car? People look up to you. How could you have done that in public? You look so good, but that tie doesn't do you justice. Or that dress doesn't do you justice. If we can only find a compliment first, it makes it softer. And so let's review everything that we said, and we'll end with a great thought. Let's remember that the Torah, when the Torah is talking about Chava, the Torah brings to us the letter Samach for the first time, because that Samach symbolizes the idea of a wall of protection. That's why Ezer Kenegdai, the Ezer, the word for Ezer in Targum is Samach, that's a Samach. That's why Nekeva to Soivev Gever, she walks around the Chosin to offer him protection, and he gives her the ring. And as we said, Ezer Kenegdai is also equal to 360. We learned by Avram and Sarah, there was conflict, rift, and dissension on a higher Madrega. By Yitzchak and Rivka, by Yankov and Rachel. And the Torah is telling it to us for a reason. The Torah is telling it to us that we should know that in every marriage there's an Ezer aspect and there's a Kenegdai aspect. But the whole total picture should be an Ezer Kenegdai. It's built in marriage. That's why the Yetzer HaAdam, the man, is created with a wife, not a brother and a sister, because that Boser Echot is a new home, a new child, a new idea. Marriage is a challenge. And the way we're going to meet that challenge is by being the right partner, not talking it into ourselves that we have to find the right partner. The way we're going to be able to make our marriages positive is by being happy. If you're happy, you'll be able to make others happy. Let's remember Dr. Abba Goldman's great advice. La Pesach Chatos Reves, even tonight, when you go home, the first thing should be a positive remark. Let's remember what Rav Moshe told the Chassanim. Every person is different. We can't expect men and women to have the same mindset. And so therefore, if we want to be sure that we have children that have a good marriage, we have to set the example, as Yaakov Solomon said, to set a positive example of what good marriage is, then our children will be able to have good marriages. Maybe we should do like that couple in Baltimore. Keep a list, a husband and a wife. Mark those things that you think are important. See what the spouse says, and you'll see levels of communication that you didn't realize were possible before. Let's remember what Rabbi Yoel Lipsker tells us. You can give a compliment even on a partial thing, and that too enhances a marriage. Let's remember what Rabbi Matas Roberts told us. The four A's: admiration, attention, appreciation, and affection. Let's remember to say thank you. Not to take each other for granted. Let's teach our children to say thank you to parents. Maybe the husbands from now on should begin to wait for their wives so that everybody eats together. And it sends a message by osmosis that the wife is not a servant, she's not a maid, but that she's an equal partner in marriage. And the wife should train the children to say thank you for the father, for the ruchnius and the gashmius that it brings into the house. Never, never degrade a spouse in public. Never, never degrade each other in front of children. And don't degrade yourself as well. Continue to be attractive both physically and mentally. Be a good listener. Seek out advice. Learn to criticize. Specific criticism is acceptable. Global criticism, sometimes, but never, never, chas v'shalom, demeaning criticism. And let's remember that story, Zelo Chashuv. That's a story that we should take home with us. I recently spoke in Mir, in Eretz Yisrael, in the Beis Yisrael Shivlach, and I told this over to about maybe 200-300 Bokrim, many younger light there. And that night, one of the boys came over to my son, and he said he went to the olive wood shop. You know that olive wood shop where you can get your name made in wood? So he went to the olive wood shop, and he asked them to have a little plaque made, Zelo Chashuv. Maybe that's a plaque that we should keep in our homes and our businesses and our schools. And let's remember, if we have to give criticism, the best way is with a compliment. You're so considerate, you're so fine, it's partners that you should do something like that. I just want to end with this tremendous thought. In Yiddish, there's an expression, when a couple gets married, Zivug zal oile yofa zayin. So the Satan Rebbe once said a tremendous verse. The word oile in Yiddish or in Hebrew many times has a connotation. Oile is begamatria. For example, if let's say you want to say the word Ava is oile 13, it's begamatria 13. The word David is begamatria, it's oile 14. So the Satan Rebbe said, what does it mean that the zivug zol oile yofa zayin? Oile means it's begamatria. It's begamatria yofa. That's what the zivug should be. Yofa is the gematria 95. You look it up in the Sefer Achinuch. You know what the 95th mitzvah is? You will never believe this from the Sapna Rebbe. Va'asu li migdash v'shachanti v'saifam. The Eretz says in Parshas Truma, make for me a migdash and I will dwell there. Va'asu li migdash, that's the 95th mitzvah. We want that the zivul zal oyle yofazayim, that it should be yofay to talk to be a migdash ma'at. We have to try to make sure from tonight on that we will do everything possible that our migdash should be oyle yofa. Every home is a mini Beit HaMikdash. And if we can only learn to have Ava, Va'afa, and Sholay in our home, that will set an example for others. That will set an example for our community, for our friends, for our business associates. And then hopefully it'll spread to all of Klal Yisrael, so that ultimately, by making sure that our Mikdash is in order with Sholay, that will talk of Yisrael, to see the ultimate Beit HaMikdash, which should be built in Sholem. I thank you for inviting me, and I thank you for listening.